Your dial is set to 89.1 WFDU Teaneck, the global voice of Fairleigh Dickinson University. I'm Ron Olesko, and we have a very special guest with us right now. Joining us today from his home in Staten, well, he's actually not in Staten Island. He's here in our studios with us today, but he's a native of Staten Island and came by to share some music. And welcome to WFDU, John Sprung. Hi, John. How are you?
Fine, thanks, Ron. As a technical correction, Borough President Marty Markowitz in Brooklyn would be furious.
Oh, you're in Brooklyn?
To have me misidentified. I am a Brooklynite.
I apologize.
That's perfectly
all
right.
I didn't mean to slight Brooklyn or Staten Island or anything like that.
What's the old expression? Some of my best friends are from Staten Island?
Right, right. Well, we're glad you're here today in Teaneck, New Jersey, because we've enjoyed your music. You now have your second CD out. It's a lovely recording that we've been playing called Remember Me and Other Songs. Remember Me being a song that you premiered on this show just a couple of years back.
Yes.
And you've been busy writing ever since.
Yes. Well, some of the songs, the interesting thing about it, at least interesting to me and I hope to others, was it's a compendium of songs written over the last 30 years. And I say in the liner notes, some odder than others. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to do it both to capture a feeling of where I'd been and where I am now.
Uh-huh. Well, I wonder, would you mind sharing a song with us now? Would you like to do a live one?
I'd like to do a new song, actually, in recognition of this day. It has the title Leipzig, 1813.
Mm-hmm.
And while that might not immediately resonate with your listeners, that is today is the actual birthday, the 192nd anniversary of the birth of Richard Wagner.
Uh-huh.
May not have been a folk musician, but was a Volk musician. So I have taken the liberty of composing an arioso that draws freely from one of his most familiar numbers, which I will try right now. Wagner was born upon this very day in 1813, back in Leipzig far away. He wrote the Ring der Nibelungen that you surely knew. He wrote Parsifal, Lohengrin, and many others too. He wrote Der Meistersinger and The Flying Dutchman, too. He was Adolf Hitler's favorite and no friend of the Jew. So happy birthday, Richie. Your operas make us swoon. You were a loathsome bigot, but you sure could write a tune.
Very well done. Oh man, we try to celebrate birthdays. I don't know if this is one we really want to celebrate, but at least we've acknowledged it here. A topical songwriter now, John Sprung. Very very clever tune. It's hard to get rhymes though with Ring of the Nebulung and Meistersinger, but you pulled it off there. Well, John, I think we ought to reintroduce you to some of our listeners. I know you've been playing music since you were a kid. I mean, I know you were. Was it in camp where you first started playing music?
Yeah. Yes, my father, in addition to being a lawyer, was a camp director for a charity camp. And my mother was also a camp director at a different camp. She was a teacher in the city school systems. So I grew up surrounded by campfire songs. And a song, for example, you mentioned Woody Guthrie earlier. I can't remember not knowing the song So Long It's Been Good to Know You.
Mm-hmm.
So we were surrounded by the likes of Josh White, Burl Ives, the Weavers. Actually, Weavers came a little later on, Paul Robeson. So this music was at the very background of my consciousness.
Uh-huh. It's. I think somebody should really do a study about this, because really the camps and the whole culture that kept folk music alive in those years, very important part in the role of in spreading folk music and starting that folk revival. People like Pete Seeger managing to find work even in singing songs. And as you said, those songs are with us. I mean, for me, I remember when I was a kid, put the song Put Your Finger in the Air. It was a Woody Guthrie song. We used to sing that in school, so it's good work. And I guess as you got into college, I understand you were in a doo-wop group. And
well, I was involved in a doo-wop group in high school, but in college I was in a group called the 5-2, and I gather there is a new group that has taken that name, and God bless them.
They're actually called Jive 5-2.
Jive 5-2.
So I guess they took the jive to, you know, avoid any kind of lawsuit.
Right. We were anything but jive.
Well, you were doing some great music, and I know you also started doing some solo work. I read on your website that you did a lot of concerts, even down south, for Head Start.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When Head Start was in its infancy, I was most privileged to perform there, sing for the kids. That was a great thrill.
Yeah, it's a rewarding experience.
Yes.
Did you write songs about the experience at the time, or...?
No, actually. I have not.
Mm-hmm.
I have not.
Yeah. Well, I understand you are writing some songs about, I guess, current issues.
Yes.
And I think you've got a new one for us, too. It deals with something I think it's on all of our tongues these days.
Yes. It's called Social Insecurity, Ron. And one of the things, without wanting to get too preachy, and I say this regardless of where people come out on these issues, people would have to recognize that it's difficult to finance an expensive war at the same time you're preserving tax cuts, because the money has to come from somewhere. So in the Social Security plan, the idea of private investment accounts costs, and this is not a number that I'm inventing, but in order to establish those private investment accounts, there would have to be $2 trillion raised.
Wow.
So this song is called Social Insecurity. And I'd like to do it right now.
Thank you, John Sprung.
As boomers like me, who's approaching maturity, put solvency strains on our social security. And issues like funding and increased taxation can lead to decisions for new legislation. We're reaping the deficit our leaders have sown, and we're seeking solutions from sources unknown. To Iraq, truly, warily bound goes each man at a cost running millions each day, tra-la-la. How actuarially sound is the plan for the costs that our kids must defray, la-la-la, for the costs that our kids must defray. Now the money is there in a source once unreachable. The methods we'll use are, of course, unimpeachable. We'll scavenge the trust funds set aside for the reason of easing our seniors at the end of their season. We'll make up the difference caused by this divestment by permitting the young folks a private investment. To Iraq, truly, warily bound goes each man at a cost running millions each day, tra-la-la. And how actuarially sound is the plan? These expenses our kids must defray, la-la-la. These costs that our kids have to pay. Now if poverty comes from this neat peculation, we've no one to blame for our bad speculation. The safety net's only of use to some girly men. The risk of the market works fine for us burly men. And if these decisions lead to insufficiencies, tax Social Security to cure the deficiencies. To Iraq, truly, warily bound goes each man at a cost running millions each day, tra-la-la. And how actuarially sound is the plan? These expenses our kids must defray, la-la-la. The costs that our kids have to pay.
All right, give us something to think about there. That's a great song.
I have to give, if I may, a very brief disquisition on how this song came into being.
Uh-huh.
I was in a discussion at the office with one of my colleagues, a lapsed lawyer by the name of Ed Sisk, who's a very bright guy, a very good investment banker, and we were talking about this issue. And at one point, I used the phrase actuarially sound. And Ed said, bet you can't use that in a song and rhyme it.
Uh-oh. You never challenge a songwriter.
You got it.
Well done.
So this one was for you, Ed.
Well, I like that. You know, it's a tough issue, and you really point out a lot of different things in that song, which I think every good songwriter should do. You know, there's a song, you have a new CD that we mentioned called Remember Me and Other Songs, and there's a song here, which I think you may have actually performed live last time, if I'm not mistaken. Nancy Green?
I had not written Nancy that
time.
Okay.
Well, I'd like to share this one with our audience. It's talking about makeovers, in effect. Could you introduce this one for us?
Sure. I remembered noticing one time, I'm a big pancake fan. I love pancakes. Mm. And, you know, I know we've had this sort of sentimental attachment to brands, and that to be sure, Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben have their roots in the antebellum South. And at one point I noticed when I went to the supermarket to pick up some pancake mix, Aunt Jemima had changed. She still had the same name, but she was a, you know, very elegant, well-coiffed lady with earrings, no do-rag, you know. Right. So the sentimental part of me that went back to my childhood missed old Aunt Jemima. So this song is sort of a biographical sketch of her and the way political correctness changes our branding.
I woke up this morning to an unfamiliar smell. My wife was cooking pancakes, but they didn't ring my bell. They were thin and flat and sweetish, and at the risk of sounding coy, if it isn't Aunt Jemima's, then it's not the real McCoy. So I asked my honey, Tiffany, did she really think that I wouldn't notice that these pancakes were for a different kind of guy? She told me Aunt Jemima's mix was old and day class A. And I said to her, that's a lot of crepe and no way to start my day. Unlike Betty Crocker, Peter Payne, and Mr. Clean, Aunt Jemima was a real live mama by the name of Nancy Green. So I went down to the A&P and I looked up on the shelf. The smile was still familiar, but it lacked that sense of self. Old gone was Auntie's kerchief and that old bandana too. And also about 100 pounds, she was into something new. I inquired of the manager, hey, where's my favorite cook? What'd they do to Aunt Jemima? How'd she get that Oprah look? He said, I only work here, but it ain't no mystery. The do-rag and the apron are ancient history. Unlike Betty Crocker, Peter Payne, and Mr. Clean, Aunt Jemima was a real live mama by the name of Nancy Green. Now don't give me a lecture, listen up lest I get sore. There was this slave named Nancy Green, born in 1834. Two fellows, Rutt and Underwood, had a pancake recipe that was known as Aunt Jemima's till they filed for bankruptcy. So along came R.T. Davis, who bought them name and all. And the only thing he needed was a person he could call by the name of Aunt Jemima when in 1893 he met a maid named Nancy Green, and the rest is history. Unlike Betty Crocker, Peter Payne, and Mr. Clean, Aunt Jemima was a real live mama by the name of Nancy Green. At the World's Fair in Chicago, she made her proud debut, telling tales and frying pancakes for the old red, white, and blue. Soon a painting of her smiling face adorned each box of flour, and still would be had not PC arisen at this hour. So here's this stately woman with her earrings and her poils, a beauty parlor hairdo, touch of gray amidst the coils, gone a red bandana and a kerchief of our youth. She's nice, but she's not Nancy Green, familiar as Babe Ruth. Unlike Betty Crocker, Peter Payne, and Mr. Clean. Aunt Jemima was a real live mama by the name of Nancy Green. She died in an accident in 1923. A succession of Jemimas came and went, as you can see. But no one like my Nancy, sweet and smiling on my batter. Oh, why should she get slimmer while the rest of us grow fatter? So home I went disconsolate, no pancake mix in hand. And I sat down to the table, unprepared to let things stand. But I had my wafer thin Suzette, its powdered surface cold. And I bid farewell to Nancy Green's Jemima dreams untold. Unlike Betty Crocker, Peter Payne, and Mr. Clean. Oh, Aunt Jemima was a real live mama by the name of Nancy Green.
Oh, I love that piece. That is, you know, a little bit of history there. But yeah, and I wonder though, I don't know if I would want a box of pancakes. You know, I guess maybe this being PC, but when you see somebody heavy set, you know, maybe right. Slimming isn't a bad idea. I don't know.
Make a good point.
Someone also once told me that Samuel Adams beer, they have a light beer, and if you look at it closely, he actually looks thinner on the light beer. I think somebody may have had too many beers before they started that.
I wouldn't put it past Madison Avenue.
You never know. John Sprugg is with us today, and that was a cut from John's album called Remember Me and Other Songs. It's John's second album, and you have a website now that I guess people can get to. I know we have a link on our website, WFTU.fm, but if somebody wanted to get to you directly, how could they reach you?
Yes, it's www.folklawproductions.com, and it's not folklore. It's folklore, which is my attempt at a clever play on words.
Right. Now, to our listeners, we should mention that your day job is you are a lawyer, and you admit it freely.
Yeah, I try not to let it get in the way of my music,
right.
But I plead guilty.
A lawyer with a sense of humor. I love that. You've written some great songs, and you know, having a day job, a very tough one, you know, that you have, how do you find time to mix it all and make music?
I sleep little.
That's it. Okay. But it's got to be tough, though. I mean, or is music kind of a therapy, a way of
actually
relaxation?
Actually, it is. Yeah. The music and writing are things that are a very nice counterpoint to what I do during the day. It's a way that I relax.
Mm-hmm. Well, you do a great job of it.
Thank you.
Originally, we were going to have you on Mother's Day, but you know, you came down with a little cold, and
yes.
We wanted to get you here in better voice, and we're glad we did. But you had a song that you were going to share, particularly for Mother's Day, and I know we're a couple weeks late, but you know, moms are still out there, and you know, let's see if we can get that song in for them.
Thanks, Ron. It actually the timing works out pretty well because my late mother would have been 95 just next week, June 1st.
Wow!
So she's very much, very much in my mind, very much in my thoughts. As she was on Mother's Day. And when I had my show at the Hurdy-Gurdy back in 1998, I'm very proud to say she was in the audience when I sang this. And I was able to look out on her as I did. And I like to think she's looking down on me when I sing Mother, the Queen of My Heart, because Mom, you are and will always remain the Queen of My Heart. It's the great Jimmy Rogers wrote this. I had home down in Texas, out where the blue bonnets grew, I had a kindly old mother. How happy we were, just we two. One day the angels took her. It's a debt that we all have to pay. She called me close to her bedside, and to me these words she did say. Son, don't go drinking or gambling. Promise you'll always be straight. 10 years have passed since that promise. My words I do rue, I must state.
I started out gambling for pastime. Soon I was just like the rest. I lost my clothes and my money, never dreaming that I'd fail the test. One night I bet all my money. Nothing was left to be seen, and all that I needed to win it was one card, and that was a queen. The cards, they were dealt round the table. Each took his luck in the draw, and I drew the one that would beat them. I looked at it, here's what I saw. I saw my mother's picture, and in it she seemed to say, son, you have broken your promise. So I threw the cards away. My winnings I gave to a newsboy. I should have known from the start I shouldn't have broken the promise I made to my mother, the queen of my heart. Ay-de-ole, ole, 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 ole.
Well done. All right. I love that. Great Jimmy Rogers song.
Thank you.
Nice version here by John Sprung, who's with us in the studios today. John, you mentioned the hurdy-gurdy, and I remember you recorded an album at Zeke's Place.
Yes.
The original, well,
yes.
Not one of the little sidelights that they were doing. Unfortunately, they don't hold Zeke's Place anymore, but the hurdy-gurdy is still growing strong. But that was your first album, the live recording at Zeke's Place, although I understand you did there was a 78 that you recorded back, or not 78, I'm sorry, a 45 that I think that you recorded of an old Paul Simon song when you were much younger.
Yeah, that was, he was my brother,
uh-huh.
And I've posted a small reward, redeemable in Confederate money, for anybody who could find that. My fraternity brothers, Mike Weiner and Bob Levine, and I did a Paul Simon song. And this was really before he was known. I think we're talking about probably the fall of 1963.
Wow.
We recorded that. There was a high school classmate of mine by the name of Artie Wayne who produced a hit song called Meet Me at Midnight Mary. And he got us into the studio at Roulette Records. And we cut that and a song called Mornin' Dove, which was Turtle Dove in copyright disguise.
Uh-huh.
So we did, he was my brother with that group, the 5-2.
Wow.
And I still have it on reel to reel.
Oh, I'd love to hear that sometime.
It's a great song.
So that was your first recording experience. Then the Zeke's Place was your first CD. And now you've got your new one out called Remember Me. And this time you did a little more studio production and a little more involvement, I guess. I mean, it's not a live album like Zeke's.
Right.
Different experience for you doing
it? It was a different experience. As a matter of fact, one thing I'd like to share with you and your listeners is I brought it in to a very talented guitarist by the name of Ed Littman, who I was told had a recording studio. And he said he didn't run the recording studio anymore, although he had a friend who did that. But after listening to the CD, he said he'd like to try to remaster it because he thought there was a quality, sort of coffee house quality, that might be lost if I produced it with his trio, which mm-hmm. was a very good band of musicians. So I said, look, let's give it a try. And he did. And I liked the way it came out by and large. And so we decided to stick with that.
Uh-huh. Came out really nice.
Thank you.
There's a tune I'd like to play. Shows a little production here. A song called Frankie.
Yes.
Could you introduce this one to us?
Oh, I'd be very happy to.
A little different than the folky material.
Yeah, it's the one sort of non-folk song that's on there, and I tried deliberately to do it not only in the form of the Great American Standards, but I tried to have the sound quality reflect a 78 that was recorded with rainfall as atmospheric background. And it's an homage, if you will, to the late, great Frank Sinatra, who, regardless of where you come out in music, and remember, Frank Sinatra sang The House I Live In, which started as a folk song. Josh White had a wonderful recording of that. But Frank Sinatra was someone who I think touched us over the years in so many different ways, and was such an enduring character of undiminished musical quality. Even in his later years, his tastefulness was impeccable.
Whoops, that's the wrong one, isn't it?
Yeah, that is the wrong one.
Oh, I'm looking at is that cut 11 or cut 12? Let's see. Let's try this again. Sorry about that. Live radio, folks.
The lamplight flickers in Lover's Lane as the rain begins to fall. A man in a raincoat is walking along as I lose myself deep in recall. He was a skinny little man with floppy suits of gray and tan. But when they said, "Strike up the band," how tall he'd stand. Frankie, Frankie, sing me one more song. Bobby Soxers came to swoon each time they heard that young man croon. He had a way of breathing life into each tune. Frankie, Frankie, Frankie. Please sing me one more song. He sang in moods subdued and bright, and many times when I'd get tight, I'd play his records late and low into the night. Frankie, Frankie, forget the rights, forget the wrongs. He's laid to rest, but his bequest lives on in song. Sit back and listen while you hear. The tone is warm, the message clear. The golden voice shines through the tarnish of the year. Frankie, 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 please sing me one. Sing me one more song.
That's a real sweet song.
Thank you.
Frankie from John Sprung, cut from his album called Remember Me and Other Songs. You write about a lot of different subjects, you know, things that I guess are very personal to you, Frankie and Aunt Jemima, and also the Red Sox. Now, you wrote a song called The Red Sox Lament a few years ago, and I guess you had to do a little update to that one, huh?
Yeah, I had to do it. I had to change it because they went and changed the ending on me in 2004.
Oh, boy. Well, would you mind sharing that one with us?
Yes, this is the world premiere of the new ending to The Red Sox Lament.
Oh, very good.
And I'd like to dedicate it to my Red Sox friends, of whom I have none. No, in all seriousness, I'd like to dedicate it to David, to Darren, to Rob and Rob. There are two Robs who are Red Sox fans. And, of course, to your fellow radio personality, Jonathan Schwartz, who's one of the most outspoken Red Sox fans. Anyway, here goes the Red Sox Lament circa 2004. Great-grandpa Kelly moved to Boston fresh from Ireland's green, a town renowned for chowder and two fine baseball teams. We might have all been Braves fans, that is, until we lost them. But ever since then, we Kelly men root for the Sox in Boston. Now therein lies the story of how our fall began. The Red Sox sold Babe Ruth away to that Colonel Rupert man. He'd led the league in homers and pitched two shutout games. But it's been the last World Series that the Sox had to their name. 'Cause up to then, the New York Yanks had never won a crown. And since then, they'd won 26, with us still waiting round. Now some folks call it kismet, and karma, fate, and worse. But those of us in Boston recognize it as the curse that it was 86 years and counting since the Red Sox won it all. In Boston, all October meant was another empty fall. If we never made the playoffs or pennants, better still, then we'd have far fewer suicides and dreams gone unfulfilled. My daddy loved Ted Williams back in 1941. He batted 406 that year, the year the Yankees won. DiMaggio won the MVP, but that's fair after all. They say the fishing's mighty fine in Boston in the fall. Now Boston had a dreadful year in 1948. Cleveland beat us in the playoffs and the press swept the Braves right off the plate. In 49, we led the league until the final game, when once again those Yankees came and squelched our shot at fame. In 75, I went to see us beat the Red Machine, when Carlton hit that foul pole homer high above the screen. We tied the series 3 games each, but couldn't win the purse, 'cause Bench and Rose just thumbed their nose and pointed to the curse that it was 84 years and counting since the Red Sox won it all. In Boston, all October meant was another empty fall. If we'd never made the playoffs or pennants, better still, then we'd have far fewer suicides and dreams gone unfulfilled. I think by far the worst of all was 1978, up 14 at the All-Star break, a most exalted state. But we went into a downhill slide, and you know where it went. A date above the monster with a guy called Bucky Dent. In 86, I went to see us play game number 6. We beat the Yankees fair and square, so the Mets put in the fix. One out away from victory when Buckner missed the ball. We had the damn thing all but won when the devil came to call. And it's been 86 years and counting since the Red Sox took it all. In Boston, all October meant was another empty fall. If we never made the playoffs or pennants, better still, then we'd have far fewer suicides and dreams gone unfulfilled. For 6 straight years the Yanks had won, we came in number 2. But the wild card gave us a second chance to beat the Yanks anew. So we cowboyed up and shaved our heads, the victory we did croon. But they reinvented Bucky Dent and a guy called Aaron Boone. So just last fall at Fenway, I slunk into my seat,
with Mariano on the mound, three outs from sure defeat. But miracle of miracles, we whooped the Yanks in seven. And strange but true, we beat St. Louis. I died and went to heaven after 86 years and counting. Lord, the Red Sox won it all. We simmered in the summer, never faltered in the fall. And after all these many years, the curse has been released. The Red Sox are world champions. The Babe can rest in peace.
Oh, that is wonderful. I am not a Yankee fan. I'm not a Red Sox fan either, but I took such great delight in seeing the Red Sox beat the Yankees last year. I'm a Mets fan by heart.
Look, and by the way, I want to be fair, Ron, as a Yankee fan, every 87 years they deserve a crown.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for giving that to them. Right now, by the way, the Yankees are leading the Mets 4-3 in the ninth inning. So, well, it's not over yet. It's never over till it's over, as someone once said. But that is a wonderful song. Now, are you going to do a new CD to update that now? Or
Well, I like the studio version.
Okay.
I'd like it to stand for posterity. However, I wanted to set the record straight on this show, and whenever I do it in concert, I promise to do the new version. I'm going to be at a folk festival in August in Easton, Connecticut. I'm going to do the new version there because there are a lot of Red Sox fans, so fair is fair.
Very good. John Sprung is with us today on Traditions, and we're listening to some wonderful music from his CD and also some new songs that he's doing. I understand you've got a song about the blues.
Yes, this is a song called Understanding the Blues.
Okay, here's John Sprung.
If I may?
Sure.
If you don't believe your woman when she tells you how she feels, then you're free to believe what you choose. But when you ignore the teardrops as they glisten down her cheek, man, you'll never understand the blues. Man, you'll never understand the blues. If you think the world's against you when your cell phone's on the blink, or when lines at airports make you blow a fuse, or when traffic stalls on highways overheat your SUV, your displeasure doesn't measure up to blues. Your displeasure doesn't. 'Cause there's no refuge in your bed when the blues torment your sleep. Bad to worse is all you have to choose. Every day is a chore harder than the one before. Man, that's when you'll understand the blues. Man, that's when you'll understand the blues. If you travel where you wish and you do the things you want, and you never in your lifetime been refused, and you never felt the pain of a door slammed in the rain, man, that's when you'll understand the blues. Man, that's when you'll. Now, if you believe that life is just an accident of birth, and that some are born to win, some to lose, let one of Woody's children help unclog your stopped-up ears so you can hear when someone wails the blues. So you can hear when someone wails the blues. There's no refuge in your bed when the blues torment your sleep. Bad to worse is all you have to choose. And every day's a chore, harder than the one before. Man, that's when you'll understand the blues. Man, that's when you'll understand the blues. If you don't believe your woman when she tells you how she feels.
Very nice.
Thank you.
You have a really nice touch with words.
Thanks so much, Ron.
There's songwriters that can write so internal that it gets tough for an audience to really understand what they're talking about. But your songs are very human, very very much sharing emotions I think we all share, and stories that we all want to hear. And I hope we hear a lot more from you in the years to come.
Well, they've all been translated from Aramaic, so they lose a little, but you get the gist of it.
We get the point, right. So you've got your second CD out now, and I guess you've got some new songs in the bag. I assume you'll be working on a third one before long?
Yes, sir.
Oh, we're looking forward to that. You know, before we end today, John, I want to share one more song with our listeners. A song that I had the honor of having you premiere on this show when you were first here. A beautiful song. And there were so many songs that were written about 9/11, but this was one that really stands out. A song called Remember Me. And I'd like to share it. But before we do, I just want to thank you again for coming by here today and spending some time with us. Could you give our listeners again another, how did they get in touch with you? What's your website?
Sure. Happy to. And incidentally, Ron, thanks so much for having me. It's a real pleasure to be on your show.
Thank you.
The website is www.folklore.com. And once again, that's L-A-W, not L-O-R-E.
Right.
And I would love to hear from you to get your reactions to the show. And if I may be permitted a shamelessly self-referential plug, it is possible to order the CD via the website and blindingly clear instructions. So if any of you is so moved, I'd be happy to accommodate you. You asked about Remember Me.
Yes.
I wrote the song, and I think I may have said on the show that I had written it out of a mix of sorrow and anger, which I felt then and feel to this day. But in looking at the song over the years, particularly when I was cutting the CD, I felt that the last stanza, which was kind of a martial call to arms, you know, our eagle has arisen after slumbering far too long, awakened on this day of infamy. He's sharpening his talons on your mountains and your sands and will etch thereon in stone, remember me. And I felt, in a way, I wanted to pay more homage to the victims of that horrible, horrible tragedy. So I changed the last stanza, and that's what mm-hmm. is reflected on the CD and what you will be playing.
Mm. Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of the songs that did come out about 9/11, they came out very close to it, and I think when you're dealing in such anger and such shock, it's hard to really write the song. I mean, you did a great job with it in the beginning, and I think these changes that you've made to it have really been a nice addition. So,
thanks so much.
Well, John, thank you so much for coming here today and sharing some songs, and we look forward to the next appearance.
You're very welcome, Ron.
Okay, let's listen now to John Sprung and Remember Me.
Near the Hudson River stands a makeshift fence and posted there for passers-by to see. Our photos of the fallen from that grim September day, and on each one the words, remember me. Kevin looks out on the world through bright and shining eyes. A fireman his father bade him be. Led 50 people down the smoky stairs of Tower 2, and then went back for more, remember me. Remember those just starting out and others nearly done. All races and religions, all victims, everyone.
man each is looking down on us and makes this fervent plea. Pick up where we left off, remember me. I am Yolanda, and before I dove into the sky, I liked to ski and dance and sang off key. I left behind a promising career in high finance, and the fiancé, I hope, remembers me. Tony is the gentleman behind that fierce mustache. He knew he'd be a cop since he was three. Yolanda crushed him when she fell in an ending unforeseen. He gasped in disbelief, remember me. Remember those just starting out and others nearly done. All races and religions, all victims, everyone. And each is looking down on us and makes this fervent plea. Pick up where we left off, remember me. Debbie is a pert and pretty civil engineer. She was working for the Port Authority. She knew the lone escape route and showed many folks the way, but lingered far too long, remember me. Lucky Trevor Jackson dodged a shell in Vietnam, survived the blast in 1993, but luck ran out on Trevor when a mountain of debris muffled his last words, remember me. Remember those just starting out and others nearly done. All races and religions, all victims, everyone. And each is looking down on us and makes this fervent plea. Pick up where we left off, remember me. Richard Wu was working when he saw the plane approach. He was gauging shifts in foreign currency. He called his wife upon the cell to tell her, kiss the kids, and I love you more than life, remember me. I was working as a waiter in the windows on the world. A citizen, it was my dream to be. And yes, my name is Ibrahim, and I too died that day. Take pity on my wife, remember me. Remember those just starting out and others nearly done. All races and religions, all victims, everyone. And each is looking down on us and makes this fervent plea. Pick up where we left off, remember me. There was no paradise awaiting those who crashed the planes. In hell they're damned for all eternity. And painful ever in their ear shall piercing ring the names of the innocents who cry, remember me. I'm thinking of the tattered flag our firemen held high, a symbol of resolve and liberty. I'm thinking of 3,000 friends who didn't have to die, and of their final wish, remember me. Remember those just starting out and others nearly done. All races and religions, all victims, everyone, in New York, Pennsylvania, and in Washington, D.C. They rest on hallowed ground, don't tread on me. Pick up where we left off, remember me. Just keep on keeping on, remember me.
That's John Sprung, title cut from his new CD, Remember Me. The actual titles, Remember Me and Other Songs, John Sprung. You can go to Folk Law Productions, L-A-W, not lore, Folk Law Productions, and find out more about John. Again, I'd like to thank John for coming by and sharing some great music with us today. It was a lot of fun. Well, we've got more fun coming up on Traditions.